Good morning. It is great to be here with you all. And this looks like the ordinary setup, but it's a little different today. Excuse me. Because we're in the fifth day of a five-day retreat, some of us. And I'll tell you a little more about that in a minute. So my talk this morning is going to be kind of wide-ranging, I think. I think there's going to be some joy, some pain, some fear, some hope, some determination. We're going to cover it all. So I hope you can stay with me, and I hope that's okay. So, yeah, we're in retreat, and very different looking retreat to me. I'm up here on my upper deck. Ordinarily, when the building is open and you come to a Dharma talk and there's a retreat going on, you sense the vibe right away. You see that people are really quiet. No one is talking socially, and you don't get to stay for tea because we all like to keep our focus. But today it's not so easy to see what the retreat is like, so I'm going to try to convey what that's like. And, you know, I'm getting used to connecting with the Sangha in a multitude of ways, in some kind of strange and odd ways. I even dreamed a couple of nights ago that I was on Zoom. It was kind of a regular dream with regular dream stuff happening, but it was all through Zoom. It was fairly unpleasant, but that's what we've got. That's what we've got. And I think we've been pretty patient with these distant connections, and it's worked well. So basically this morning, I have three audiences for my talk. I have all of you who have just joined in. Welcome, I am so glad to see you. I've got the Zoom audience for the retreat and the Hokyoji audience, or the Hokyoji retreat participants, who are also on Zoom here in a little box. Maybe you can see them. So Hokyoji, for those of you who don't know, is a rural Zen monastery in southeastern Minnesota, and we have an annual retreat there. And it's been part of the MZMC experience for years. And I encourage you to visit sometime when things have opened up a little more. It is an incredibly beautiful place. So Ben and I are leading this retreat. Ben is at Hokyoji leading that portion of it. And I'm here on Zoom leading another portion of it. So our Zoom audience for our retreat, we've got about 12 people. We have people from Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Alabama, California, and South Dakota in our Zoom audience. So about half of the Zoom participants are from the Twin Cities, and the other half are scattered widely over the country, which is kind of cool. And at Hokyoji, we have, I think, 7 people right now, and I am going to, yes, Ben says yes, 7 people. I'm going to call on Ben right now so we can check in with him. Ben, what's going on down there? What's it like at Hokyoji?
Wow. I love this question. Well, I think it's probably different for everyone. The birds are kind of quiet right now, and I can't ask them. For the trees, it seems like it's kind of time to let go and let some things go away and quiet down. Some of them think that it's really cool when you're letting go and quieting down to change colors. So, then for the people, well, I don't know. I hope we're doing well. It's really wonderful to be able to be together. It's totally a trip to be in the same room with 7 people. I haven't done that for a long time. And the people here are very wonderful and taking care of each other in a really inspiring way. And this retreat, we've been able to, I've really felt a deep connection to all the other people in the retreat who are not in the room. So there's about 20 of us total. And I've been able to really sense the practice of these people all over the country who I'm practicing with. Which is the case, you know, when we're just doing our regular Sunday programming any week these days. But we have tried to be a little creative and responsive to the times in finding ways to help us feel that what's happening here in this room is deeply connected to what's happening in people's houses who are also doing our same practice. So, to my mind, intimacy is reality. Interdependence is how things are. And a principal aspect of our practice is just seeing that truth. And we see that truth through our hearts and minds. So finding ways, no matter what's happening in any moment, to realize the inescapability of our interdependence. That's what this practice is. And I feel like that's what we've been doing together. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. So we chose a theme for this retreat, and we've been talking about some koans, some stories involving Layman Pang, who many of you have heard of. He was a Chinese Zen master, lived from 740 to 808, long time ago. And he's a pretty interesting character. For one thing, it's not just Layman Pang, it's his whole family. His wife, who's known as Laywoman Pang, and his daughter, known as Ling Zhao, they were all very highly realized practitioners. So it's interesting to read stories about not teacher and student exactly, but teacher and spouse, teacher and daughter. And Layman Pang was often bested by his wife, and particularly by his daughter. And it's also interesting because he was a layman. He never ordained. So like Vimalakirti, another famous layman, he was deeply realized and often bested the other masters of his day. And as I spoke about a little bit in my first talk here, and I hope folks in the retreat don't mind if there's just a bit of review here, this distinction between clergy and laity is helpful in a lot of ways with respect to roles. If you see someone wearing the black robes, you know that they've ordained, you know that they've gone through a course of study and they've made a great commitment. And I think that this is a helpful thing. But the distinction can be limiting too, because, you know, the correlation between deep practice and ordination is not exact. And of course, lay people throughout Zen, there's a history of deep realization there. And the lay clergy distinction is not quite as strong in the West, I think, as it is in Asia. In Japan, the priests live at monasteries. Here, many priests, probably most priests in this country, are out in the world practicing. The MZMC priests certainly are. We have separate homes. Many of us have families. Many of us have jobs outside of MZMC. And some people say that even ordained teachers in the West are essentially doing lay practice. And now we also have lay teachers. So we're recognizing that lay experience can qualify someone to teach. And of course, I'm glad our teachers are out in the world. I think it helps to talk about how to maintain a vivid practice within our busy lives if we ourselves are partaking in that. I'm also really glad there are monasteries because we need them. We need those places to go to. We need those places to recharge. And some of us need to live there. And that's cool too. It's all needed. So I think it's particularly interesting to talk about the lay clergy distinction at this retreat, because I feel like this retreat is kind of a lay retreat more so than any one I've ever done before. So for Zoom folks, not only are many of you lay people, but who have homes, but you're actually practicing in your home right now, as am I. I've never done a five-day retreat in my house before. It is very different. And even folks at Hokyoji may find that your lay life seems pretty close, even though you're in the monastery temporarily. There are so many things going on in the world right now that we may have come to this retreat with very busy minds, and we may carry a lot of the business of the world with us. So we've got this lay thing going, home practice. We've got monastic practice, and we're joining them together. And I talked in my first talk about how the boundary between those two things might become kind of porous. My first inclination when I was thinking, how am I going to do this retreat at home, was, well, I need a really rigid boundary. I've got to wall off my office and my deck, and this is my practice space, and I have to really guard it. And then I thought, you know, that's not going to work so well. You know, I have another person in my home whom I'm going to relate to and talk to during this retreat. And I think if I try to make it really rigid and try to imitate a conventional retreat, it's just going to lead to difficulties. So I think I'll let those boundaries be a little bit porous, and I'll see what happens. And it'll be maybe a new kind of retreat, and I'll discover what's going on there. So that's what I've been doing. And sometimes the boundaries have been pretty porous. And I'll come back to this a little bit later. But right now, as kind of a lead in to that, I would like to talk about a koan involving Layman Pang. And this is a little story called Yellow Leaves and Green Leaves. Layman Pang was adept at give and take with the Zen masters of his day. And that's what's going on here. It involves a person named Sung Shan. So one day when the layman and Sung Shan were out for a walk, they saw some monks picking greens. And Sung Shan said, "The yellow leaves are discarded while the green leaves are taken." So the yellow leaves aren't good to eat. You have to discard them. And this, I think, has to do with distinctions. We must make distinctions in the world. Although it is inevitable and inescapable that all things are connected, we also have this world to care for. We need to separate the green leaves and the yellow leaves. So the layman said, "Without noticing yellow or green, what do you make of it?" Okay, so he's beginning to play here. He's kind of issuing an invitation. But if you're not noticing yellow and green, if you get beyond distinctions, what's going on there? And Sung Shan said, "It's fine with me." And I find that a little cryptic. He could be saying, "Whatever, whatever, Layman Pang, you know, it's cool." Or maybe he's saying that It's fine with me if I leave out the distinctions and think about interconnections and boundlessness and lack of distinctions, then everything is as it should be. It's fine with me. Well, the layman comes back at him. He says, being guest or host can be difficult. Being guest or host, either way is difficult. So guest and host, these are metaphors for the relative and the absolute. If we're a guest, we're in the position of visiting. We know what the distinctions are. If we're host, we're taking care of everything. We see all interconnections. It's like parental mind. It's like a big mind. So the layman says either of these things can be difficult. Either way. Don't get trapped either way. Don't get trapped in the world of distinctions where you don't see the beauty of interconnections. Don't get trapped in the world of interconnections where you're unable to see that we need to take care of things in the world right in front of us. Sung Shan replies, what is brought into this world is compelled by something beyond. What is brought into this world is compelled by something beyond. That's pretty cryptic too, but he may be saying, only because we have the one can we have the other. Only because we have this solid and wonderful world, which appears to have things, can we have this thingless world where everything is connected. The layman then said, this is so for all of us, is it not? And by this, he means the fullness of reality here in the present moment. This, we all have this. It's the same for all of us, right? Getting beyond these distinctions. It's just here. It's just this. It's one thing. Difference and unity, they merge. Emptiness and form, they are not different. They're all the same. This is so for all of us, is it not? Sung Shan said, so it is, so it is. And it goes on and on. It's like a tennis match. They keep going back and forth. They're playing here. The layman said, consequently, without noticing yellow or green, it is difficult to say anything. So previously, the layman said, hey, but what if you don't notice yellow and green? Now he's saying, well, you have to notice yellow and green. Sung Shan laughed and said, so, are you finished talking about this? How about if we just don't make distinctions, okay? Then the layman bowed to the assembled monks who were picking greens, going beyond again. Then Sung Shan says, the assembly invites your participation. Yes, join us. Join us in this world of distinctions. Help us separate the leaves. And you might think the layman would join in heartily, but the layman then left. So back and forth, they're playing with form and emptiness. There's a great fluidity there. They're seeing this. There are two different perspectives and they can move easily from one perspective to another and they can comment upon them and they can go beyond gate. They can go beyond these distinctions too. And maybe during the retreat, we've moved freely sometimes in this way. I'm sure we've all had a few moments at least of free movement, and some maybe quite a lot, as in the trees. I've been talking about the trees. I've been talking about looking at the trees. Talked about cottonwood trees and how much I love them, how I remember them from my childhood. And what I remember, which may or may not have actually happened back then, is being able to look at the leaves, you know, there when there's a breeze like there is now, and you can see these leaves behind me, right behind me, even with my shoulder here is a Japanese lilac, and then there's a silver maple up above. You know, you can watch these leaves and you can kind of get lost in them if you really, really relax your mind. And that's what retreat is about. It's about relaxing your mind. It's about finding ease. You can maybe watch those leaves and be present with them, but no, you can watch the leaves and actually lose yourself. And you can be the leaves. You can find yourself just right there, and you can lose yourself. You can lose yourself in them. And so I went out and I got myself another cottonwood rattle. And this is a little bigger than the one I had a couple days ago. And it's a little fresher. And I love this because it's not green like the cottonwood tree right over here, but it has this rattle, you know? It has this rattle. This is magic. This is magic. We can lose ourselves in this. We can lose ourselves in emptiness, interconnection. We can know that this branch is not different from the tree, and the tree is not different from the trees around it. It doesn't have a separateness. The tree's not separate from the leaves it has lost. It's not separate from the ground. It's not separate from anything. It's all together. And yet, it has such solidity. It has such beauty. This world of supposedly non-separate objects. They're not really separate, but my goodness, they are vivid and beautiful. And we can name them, and that's very useful. And that helps us to take care of things. We can take care of the trees. We can water them. We can fertilize them. We can look after them. We can take care of all of the things in the world. We can be at that place where Layman Pang was so comfortable playing, where we see those two perspectives both at once. And it's just magic. It's just magic. And they're porous boundaries here. There are no boundaries. They become porous and then sometimes they disappear entirely. And that lay monastic boundary, that's pretty porous too. At least it has been for this retreat. It's become a little more porous for me. And that's what I'd like to talk about now. I'd like to share a little bit about how this retreat has gone. Mostly, I'll need to talk about my own experience here. I don't want to speak for anyone else. It might be similar, my experience, to that of other retreatants. Maybe we'll find out at tea, which we're going to have a little later. But I'd like to share the perspectives that have come from looking at my daily life in kind of a different way. As someone said yesterday, a retreat at home brings up different stuff than a retreat in the Zendo. And maybe this will ripple out to you a little bit. And maybe, I hope you can feel it, even though we're remote here. I hope you can feel the dedication of the practitioners down at Hokyoji and how much they're putting their hearts into this and how dedicated they are and how dedicated the folks on Zoom are. And they're doing this for all of us. And I hope you can feel that. And this stuff is really hard. It's hard at Hokyoji, I know. But it's hard in your home too. It's easier in some ways because some logistical things are kind of easier. and there's some room in the schedule, but being in the midst of all of your distractions is not an easy thing. But I tried to abandon expectations. I tried to think, well, this is a new kind of retreat. This is a householder's retreat. And I'm learning stuff about my life, really a lot of stuff. I see some of my habits so clearly. I see all of the little comforts that I've been allowing myself, especially, you know, since isolation began. And I see how some of them are really helpful and some of them are not so helpful. And there are things I could do about that. And I'm seeing my relationship with my partner a little more clearly too. I mean, we've been here for 6 months together, almost all the time. And kind of going to this deep place, I see, oh, there's some changing here. This is interesting. There's some things here that maybe need a little attention, things I could do a little better. And I'm just seeing my own neighborhood more clearly. I walked over here to Linwood Park every day, which is right by my house. And I've been going over to Linwood Park for years now, but I never saw its beauty the way I saw it this week. Walking among the trees there and seeing how they've begun to drop their leaves, and there's this little circle of leaves underneath because there hasn't been any wind. And it's just heartbreakingly beautiful to see how those leaves have fallen. To see trees, they're not entities in themselves. They're not separate from those leaves that have fallen. Who could say what constitutes a tree as an entity? We name it, but that's pretty arbitrary. It is not separate from all of those other things. It's part of a process, and I see the process going on. I see the leaves falling. I see the sadness there, and I see the beauty of it. And so I had my porous little zendo up here with the porous boundaries, but one day I drew in a little bit, and I sat just in my office, and I kind of confined myself a little bit because I felt like I was coming to this place where I needed some real focus. And so during a break, I settled down for a little reflection and spent some time at my altar, as I do every day. I bow to my altar, my home altar, which has Buddhas on it and has my robes and it has cards. I put cards there for people who are sick or injured, or people who have died, and there are quite a few cards there. And the fact, you know, the great fact I brought with me into this retreat, and it's still here, is that I have this great task before me, as we all do. We have this great task, the great task that is our life. We've got all of these things going on. We have isolation, and we don't know how long that'll keep going on. We've got the coronavirus and how to deal with that and how to protect ourselves and how to protect our family and how much to engage ourselves in the world and how to do that in these difficult, limited ways. We've got our work. We've got our jobs. I've got my Zen Center work. My goodness, there's a lot there. And we've got the state of the country, which is intense now. And we've got all of these things together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. What do I do? And I came up with these three slogans. I do this periodically. Organizing principle. You think of it, and then you can organize your life around it for a while. These are goals in the good sense in the world of distinctions. And I came up with three, pretty simple. Be brave, be kind, take care of your health. That's what I would like to do. Be brave. Be brave. Because this is not about my comfort. This can't be about my comfort. We've got things to do here. I'm afraid that this is probably the most challenging period of my life in terms of not my personal life so much, but my relationship with the world at large and what I'm going to do. I think that this is the most difficult year of my life. I think it's worse than 1968, which is the worst year I can remember. I think it may be the most challenging year for our country since World War II, and that's 75 years. And, you know, my parents grew up in that era. They grew up in the Depression, and then during World War II, my dad went to Germany, and my mom worked in the post office. And like everyone of that generation, they just did it. You know, they didn't talk about it too much. They didn't complain. Everybody did their part. And there was that sense that we're all in this together. And I can look to them as role models and be brave. Be brave. It's not easy to be brave, but we can do this. And another way to say this is maybe, just maybe, this could not be about me so much of the time. I'm so tired of this being about me. Can I get out of that? You know, can I rise above that? So be brave. Be kind. Be kind. Of course, I don't know if I need to say so much about that one, but there are times when I could be kinder than I am. And third, take care of your health. I know I can take better care of my health. Since I've been in isolation, you know, I could get better exercise. I could eat better. I need to do that stuff in order to be effective in the world. And also, taking care of my health kind of has that, the flip side of comfort in it. The flip side of comfort, because I talked about how can this not be about my comfort? But sometimes it does need to be about comfort to the extent that you've got to take care of yourself. You've got to find comfort when you need it. You've got to be very kind and compassionate. And you can, you know, I see the little things I do to comfort myself and how some of them are really good. And that's fine. We do that and we find that balance, the right amount of comfort, not too much, you know. Not giving up, but nurturing ourselves and replenishing ourselves. So this is what I hope to do. And I know people help in very different ways, depending on what's right for them. And I think it's best, let's not measure our capacity to help against some ideal, because we'll always come up short. Let's measure by whether we're making an effort. Are we looking at our life truthfully? Are we starting with the reality of our life and making an effort? Are we challenging ourselves? That's enough. That's enough. We do what's appropriate in our life. So hopefully, I'll be a little renewed. We'll see. I tend to get renewed from these long retreats. And maybe I'll be ready to face my tasks and consider them, which ones are most important, which ones are most urgent, and take care of the most difficult ones first and not be overwhelmed. This is the great task. So that's what I hope to do. Now, usually during retreat, I don't talk much about specific actions in the world, because during retreat, We try to address human suffering and the cessation of suffering on, I think, a deeper level. You know, we try to go deep inside. We deal with these issues kind of on a primal level. Desire and cessation of desire, that's really deeper than words. It's certainly deeper than plans and strategies. But I am going to talk a little bit about a specific type of action today. And I think that's okay. The retreat is almost over. We've got a little more than an hour left. So our transition is beginning, our transition back into the world, you could say, more fully into the world. Let's hope we take our retreat with us, and it doesn't even seem like a transition, but we shall see. I could talk about family responsibilities. I could talk about the pandemic. I could talk about work. I could talk about the state of the world, but I'm going to focus on civic engagement. And the reason I'm going to do that is because of the timing. Because I won't get another chance to talk to you on a Sunday until I think late October. And there is an election coming up, and I think that's an appropriate realm for engagement in the world. And I think few people would disagree with me about civic engagement, particularly participating in elections, that that's appropriate for Zen Buddhist practitioners. We know about interconnectedness and our responsibility to others in the country and the world. We have the Bodhisattva ideal. We have right action. This, I think, is an appropriate thing for us to do. If you disagree with me, that's fine. And you can sit it out. But this is my opinion. And I know there's a lot of nervousness out there about the election. But regardless of who your chosen candidates for president are, and I make no assumptions about that, you may agree with me that this is likely the most important election of our lifetimes, given the stark contrast between the two candidates. Now, I wouldn't presume to tell you how to approach the election, but if you're thinking you'd like to do more than just vote, I can tell you, you'll probably feel better if you have a plan and you periodically review your plan and you carry it out, an election plan. Kath and I made one, and we did some research, and we sat down together, and it was kind of fun, really. And we came up with a plan, and I'm going to tell you what it is. First, we're both going to do our best to cast an effective vote. We're going to do some research, and we're going to talk about how you do that. Second, we're going to encourage other folks in our family to vote. There are some folks who maybe they're really young, maybe they're kind of on the fringes of society a bit. There's a chance they won't vote. We're going to do everything we can to help them to figure out how to do that. Third, we're giving money. I'm giving more money than I ever gave before, or ever contemplated giving before. I came up with a figure that fit that description, and then I doubled it. And so I gave that to candidates that I believe in. And I think we're going to do a second round and give some smaller amounts too. Also, I'm having conversations with people who feel differently than I do. And this is going to include some difficult conversations with members of my own family. Uncomfortable, but I'm going to do it. And it's probably going to include a few Facebook interactions, people I don't agree with. I want to be clear. What I'm not going to do is get into extended arguments where no one is listening and there's no hope of anyone's mind being changed. And what I'm not doing on Facebook is repeatedly expressing outrage, because I think it's possible we can go on Facebook or some other medium and we can express our outrage and we feel pretty good, like, okay, I've done my political activism for the day, where maybe what we've done is we've talked to a lot of people who are already convinced about stuff they already know. I think it's time to move from outrage to action. And then finally, I'm prepared for the possibility that election day, election eve, may just be the beginning, and there may be more to do after that. So I am sorry for that brief foray into the real world during a retreat. You know, I can feel it. I can feel physically something in my stomach because I've been talking about this stuff. But these are extraordinary times, and there's a lot to say, and just maybe starting to approach things like this at the end of a retreat is going to help a little bit with integration. You know, if I can bring my attentive mind to this difficult situation, I can notice when I'm getting riled up, and I can notice how to work with that. So for those in the retreat, we have a little over an hour left. Let's not end the retreat in our minds yet. Let's stay in the retreat. But perhaps during this final hour, we can bring our attention a little bit to the fact that we're on the cusp of our reentry into our busy world. And we can ask ourselves, what have I learned from this householder's retreat? Have I learned something about keeping our practice close while in the midst of my very busy life? Something about having a vivid Zen practice with my animals or my friends or my spouse in the living room. So it's not time for detailed planning yet. But maybe ask in this sort of deep place, this kind of wordless place, what can I carry forward from this retreat? And however it is for you now in the retreat is fine. If you're in the same place you were in the beginning, that's okay. You did the practice. You can keep doing the practice. It can take a while. Sometimes calm escapes us. Sometimes we have a wonderful retreat. Sometimes we have a retreat where it's like, that didn't work at all. But you know what? We keep doing them. Because we have to separate the yellow leaves from the green leaves. And let's hope that now or eventually we can renew our determination to move toward that which is good and healthy for all human beings, to do that with strength. Let's hope that each day through our practice, we can connect with our inner quietude. We can watch the agitation. We can have a little separation from the agitation. Because it's from that place of quietude that right action is going to arise. It's not going to come from here. This will help, but it comes from here, the heart mind. That's where it comes from. And let's support each other in this with gentleness and compassion. Gentleness, compassion, strength, and commitment. And let's renew our vows. Beings are numberless, vowing to save them all. Delusions are inexhaustible, vowing to extinguish them. Dharma gates are boundless. Vowing to enter them, Buddha's way is unsurpassable. Vowing to become it. Vowing to become it.